The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I am your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. In our last episode, we talked with an IT service provider who opened his own computer store, learned how he did it, and found out what you need to consider before making that move from working out of your house to opening a storefront of your own. Today we'll continue our discussion with him and talk about some important things you need to know before you sign a lease and set up your store. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. TechNibble is now mobile-friendly. In a blog post on a site at TechNibble.com, owner Bryce Whitty said TechNibble now utilizes an application called TapaTalk, which allows his forms to be viewed on smartphones as a native application as opposed to a simple mobile-ready web page. The new app supports iPhone, Android, Windows Phone 7, WebOS, BlackBerry, and some Nokia phones. EH Publishing is offering free subscriptions to Channel Pro to qualified professionals. According to the offer, Channel Pro is the only industry magazine committed to providing targeted business and technology insights for IT channel professionals, integrators, developers, white box builders, solution providers, and VARs serving small and medium-sized businesses. Each issue delivers powerful news, reviews, analysis, and advice to help you cultivate your SMB customers, run your business more profitably, and get an edge on the competition. Channel Pro is free to qualified professionals. To receive your free subscription, go to theforcefield.tradepub.com/free/CHN or click on the link in the show notes in the RSS feed for this episode. Cybercrime is moving away from Windows PCs and onto mobile devices, according to Cisco. In its 2010 annual security report, Cisco Systems said that the amount of email spam declined in 2010, while the recruitment of money mules and trust exploitation increased, and cybercriminals are shifting development of malware from Windows to mobile devices such as smartphones and tablet computers. And finally, iFixit.com reports that Apple is now using a new and unique type of tamper-resistant screw on the case of the iPhone 4. In an apparent attempt to limit access to the hardware in the phone by anyone other than Apple itself. The screw, called a pentalobe, is similar to a torque screw, but utilizes a rounded 5-point design instead of the standard 6-point head of a Torx. The screw is only used to seal the outer case and is not used internally. Access to the drivers for this type of screw are rare, and iFixit claims Apple did this to prevent users from changing the battery on their iPhones themselves. iFixit.com reports that Apple is also replacing standard Phillips screws on older iPhones with the new pentalobe screws when the phones are returned to an Apple repair facility for battery replacement or repair. Apple makes some great and innovative products. There's no doubt about that. They can and do sell millions of units on those merits alone. What I dislike about Apple is their complete show of disdain for consumers who buy their products by locking their customers out of their own hardware with a mandate to follow Apple's forced upgrades and product obsolescence. It's no secret the battery in the iPhone does not last much more than a year or so, and customers are then required to either ship their product to Apple for battery replacement or buy a new phone. It's also a common assertion that Apple overcharges for replacement batteries, and a simple swap the customer could do themselves in a couple of minutes or less and save money. This is why I don't buy Apple products. It's not because I don't like them. I'd love to have an iPhone, iPad, or an iPod Touch. They're wonderful devices with innovative features that set the bar for other products of their kind. The reason I don't buy them is because I want to own the devices. I don't want them to own me. I don't want Apple or any company to own me or my wallet. When I buy a product, I paid for it, and it's mine to use as I please. My loyalty as a customer to a company or service is not forced. It's earned. If I paid for a product, the company that made and sold it works for me, not the other way around. I decide if, when, and how to access, repair, and upgrade it, especially if I pay a premium for that product. If Apple treated their customers with the dignity and respect they deserve, I would consider buying their products. If they treated their customers like gold, I would probably go Apple all the way. However, currently they seem too controlling, and this latest move to change screws on iPhones with the obvious intent to prevent customers from accessing their own property is just one more screw to consumers, at least in my view, that's just rotten to the core. And that's the news in the Force Field. I am very particular about what goes in the Force Field, and I only promote products and services that I either use myself or would use if I needed them. This week I would like to introduce you to a sponsor who I've been using myself for reliable web hosting to keep the Force Field online 24/7. GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy's hosting plans are bigger and better than ever with 99% uptime, free 24/7 support, and no annual commitment. If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. .com names as low as $1.99, plus world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much more. Here's the best part. As a listener of the Force Field, enter the code BLU101 when you check out and save an additional 10% on your web hosting order. You want reliable web hosting at a great price? Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply, so see site for details. That's GoDaddy.com. You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8. That's 407-278-5698. Or through Skype at Savoya Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field Podcast Episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. In our last episode of the Force Field, we talked with Pat Palmer, an IT professional who owns and operates The Computer Guy, a computer store located in Hampton, Iowa. We learned how he opened his store, how he made the decision to jump from a home office to an actual storefront, and the considerations he made in staffing it properly. We also discussed why a daily commitment to attendance and punctuality is vital to its success. Today we'll continue our discussion with Pat and learn more about how he opened his store. We'll discuss the advantages of having a storefront, the disadvantages of having one, and important things to consider when renting or leasing the space to set it up, as we continue with part two of our six-part series on opening a computer store. And we're back with Pat Palmer. Pat, welcome back to the Force Field.
Well, thank you very much, Rick.
Pat, we were talking about all the factors in making that decision, that initial decision in starting and opening a computer store, an actual physical storefront. In our last episode, we were discussing just what was involved in making that actual commitment. And just to let our listeners know that I'm not discouraging the idea of opening your own computer store. That's not it at all here. The idea here is to make you informed so that you can make an educated and a right decision, because everyone's situation is going to be different. It's very, very important that you do make the right decision, because once you make that commitment, once you jump into this, there's no turning back, and it could be a very, very costly endeavor. So you want to be absolutely sure that you are absolutely sure that you want to open a computer store before you jump into this. Now, Pat, some of the obvious questions that a lot of people ask, what are the advantages of having a storefront?
Well, I think that visibility is a big key. Now, you've got to be somewhere in your town where people view you as a destination. I'm going to the computer store, or I'm going to the computer shop, or the computer guy, or whoever you are, not just, oh, well, I was walking by and headed to the bank, and I thought I'd stop in. You need to be the destination. That is the key. So you have to also give them a reason to be there, and you're going to, first of all, probably spend or have to plan a portion of what you're going to make in advertising to get people through the door. And it's just more than, I use Facebook and MySpace and LinkedIn and a lot of those social media things to get a lot of customers, but you also have to figure that there are customers who don't use that, and you have to use the traditional, you know, newspaper, radio, or whatever to get some of those people in the door. But you have to make sure that you're the destination and not just a place to stop by on the way to the hardware store.
However, it can be one. I mean, that gives you visibility, having a storefront and a sign there that you normally wouldn't have working out of your house. I mean, that's one obvious advantage. You know, it's probably one of the first ones that people think about. You know, if I have my own store, I'm there. People know I'm there. And I think another advantage, the added credibility that you have as an actual storefront, as opposed to being just one more tech listed in the phone book or just one more tech who has a website advertising a computer business. Obviously, anybody can set up a website for their own computer business, but when you have an actual storefront, that gives some added weight to customers or potential customers, I might add, that are looking for someone reliable to work on their computer.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where, like I said before, I really, my forte is not businesses. If somebody else came into town and said, you know, I think I'm going to take over all the businesses in town and do all their work, it wouldn't have too much of an argument from me. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm downtown and I have my open sign up, I've got businesses stopping in, and now businesses are relying on us. And so I'm very tickled how that's gone. But it's one of the things that if you didn't think you were going to get into that aspect of it, well, you may want to rethink that, because I didn't think I ever was, and now I am, and so I had to, of course, be prepared for that. So it's, yeah, you've definitely, when you start a storefront, you've separated yourself from maybe the text on Craigslist or, you know, the word of mouth, oh yeah, I called Jimmy, he knows it all, or whatever. And that's something to think of too, is you have to, again, be ready for that, because you don't know who is going to walk in the door. Sometimes you take a call from maybe a problem customer, and we've all got them, and we don't mm-hmm. like to call them back. Well, yep. If you don't call them back, well, you don't call them back. And every once in a while, you know, you have to fire a customer. But when they walk in the door and they're right in front of you, then that's a different option. That's a different – then you've got to, you know, handle that. So, yeah, once you put – you know, once you put your open sign up and they have the ribbon cutting and things like that, that you're there, you're in business. I remember, you know, day one, it's like, okay, here we go. That's just how I felt.
And that's why they call them establishments, because you are officially established.
Right.
Yep. As a business in your area, in your community. What are some of the disadvantages, aside from what we talked about in the earlier episode?
If you thought you were busy working out of your home, the planning and the execution of this business downtown is phenomenal, because I actually, when I started, I rented my my building or my location starting at April 1st of 2009, and it was a dump, put it bluntly. And the guy renting it to me knew that. And so out of my own pocket, because the landlord wasn't going to spend any money, I had to redo, I redid the floors. They were hardwood floors, and they were in really tough shape. I had my hardwood floor guy come in and redo those. Had friends and family paint, because there's no sense in starting a storefront if you're not going to make it look inviting or make it look like you care. And so, yeah, I had a lot of work. And so I opened up July 1st, and, you know, June 30th, I was having the guy put in my shelving for my workbench. And, I mean, that was cutting it close. So there was a lot of work that I did that I didn't have my employee even come down and do, because I really wasn't ready to pay him yet. And on top of that, you still have customers to serve. So if you've got a full 5 or 6 hour day of customers and then got to go up and put another coat of paint on or you know, whatever, and plus get fixtures, get shelving, and get your inventory, you know, that all takes time and money, and mostly money.
Yeah. Now, I went through all that myself when I set up my store, and that's one thing that'll be a rude awakening for some techs out there who haven't really done this before. But when you rent a space, the landlord doesn't really do anything for the most part. You get it as is, and you're responsible for fixing it up. Now, in some cases, the landlord will say that, well, some of the permanent fixtures you put in or some of the permanent modifications you make now belong to the landlord. In a lot of cases, that's true. Sometimes you can rip them out when you go or move on. You know, lots of times you can. Depends on what it is. But for the most part, those modifications that you make, you have to go in realizing that it's going to be an investment, and when you spend that money, it's spent, and you're going to have to make most of the repairs. If it's repairs to the outside of the building or something that's really major when you move in, you can generally negotiate that with the landlord. But for the most part, anything on the inside that you want to do to change things around or modify or fix up or prepare for your own look, your own design, that's totally at your expense. The landlord isn't going to do any of that, including things like the inside wiring, electrical wiring, low voltage wiring, anything like that. That's all something you have to do.
Yeah, that's where I'm fortunate, is because my landlord said, hey, this is your space. Don't take down the lights. The roof leaks. And the air conditioner doesn't work. You deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yeah, like you said, once you have somebody come in and re-sand and repolish the hardwood floors, that $1,700 you can't get back, and that stays with the building. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, in the entire year of 2009, I didn't have air conditioning. Luckily, it wasn't that hot. Now, I really kind of whined a little bit. Starting this year, probably about March, as you know, we don't have air conditioning. Well, he said, well, by God, the rent's going to go up. Okay, just get me some air conditioning. I mean, my rent is probably the lowest dollar figure I have to worry about a month. My rent is $300. And,
wow.
But he knew the roof leaks and there's no air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
So he threatened to raise the rent on that, and he never did. And lo and behold, my electric bill went down, actually, because it was more efficient than running the old air conditioner, which worked half the time and didn't work half the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so another thing, too, is he said, I don't care where you drill holes in the wall. It's your space. Well, in some locations, you would really have to beg and plead if you wanted to, you know, drill a hole in the wall to make a drop or run coax or, you know, your low voltage wiring or anything like that.
That's true.
Some places aren't going to let you just drill willy-nilly and do it. Now, my landlord is a lawyer, but my landlord really didn't care. He was so happy to get the thing rented that he kind of went along with everything, but he wasn't going to be the one to put $1,700 into a floor or $400 in the paint or the cabinets or whatever I put in, so he's just tickled it's rented.
Well, you know, I had a horror story in that respect when I first opened my store, my first location, and as I mentioned before, it's as is when you go in there. So if there's any cleanup that has to be done before you fix it up, like the last tenant made a mess of it, you have to go in there and clean it up yourself. And, you know, when I got into my first location, there was a lot of wiring that was ripped out, messed up. I had to go in there and get some of that fixed. For some of the electrical work, I had to hire an electrician to come in and fix that. One of the things that I did when I got in there was I noticed that, well, the drop ceiling, there were a number of tiles there that were stained which indicated a leak, so I had to check with my landlord on that. But some of them were just not great, and I wanted to open this thing up fresh because, like you, I had a fresh coat of paint put on. I really fixed it up nice, did some flooring and the whole bit. I decided to replace the tiles. Now, if I replaced one or two of those ceiling tiles, it was going to be really noticeable. You had some kind of yellowish tiles there, and then you had a couple of really nice ones, and I didn't want to do that. So I went out and purchased all new tiles, and I retiled the entire ceiling. And I had a friend of mine come in for an evening and help me do it, and we thought we were just going to get it done in about an hour or two with the two of us. But it turned out that during the middle of the process, we were right in the middle of the room, and he happened to be up on the ladder, and I was down taking the old tiles and handing him the new tiles. All of a sudden, he called out, and this tile just dropped down, and just a ton of debris just came down right on my head. And we cleared out real quick. We had hit a rat's nest. The rat's nest was right there. Now, the rats were not there anymore, but that created a huge health hazard because I inhaled a lot of that dust. And I wound up getting sick, and it delayed the opening of my store for several weeks because I couldn't even go in there for a while because I was that sick. And we had to clear everything out, and we had to clean that mess up before we could continue on. And that's one reason why I don't go into drop ceilings and do wiring up there anymore. It was that event that just scared me off from it.
Yeah, and I've got I have those old molded tin ceiling, and somebody's repainted it, and it's leaked, and it looks bad, but I'm just hoping nobody looks up. I know it adds character to the building, but add character if it looked nice. But maybe after the landlord puts a new roof on the building and raises my rent a little bit, we'll talk about it. But you get into a rat's nest in some of that. I know I had, you know, this place used to be an old pizza place. It used to be a sports shop. It used to be a lot of different things, and so I had some heat board or something on the floor where a pizza oven had been, and had to get all that up, and so the sander could come in and sand the floors. And yeah, it's just and during the time my wife had surgery, and so I kind of had to help her with her convalescing. Wow. And she couldn't work at the store, you know, to help. Now my wife doesn't work at the store because she'd probably shoot me if she did, so she might work an occasional Saturday to help me out if I'm on the road or stuck or something, but she's got a key to my store on her keychain, and that's just about it. So mm-hmm. She can come when she wants to, but she doesn't have to feel like she has to be there. So I think she's still mad because I really haven't shown her how to run the cash register yet. So, but that's just one of those things, too, is what you want, how much help you want your spouse or whatever to give with the store as well, too, because they're also giving a lot of time and patience. And we don't have kids, which is a good thing for us. But, you know, how to have handled being up at the store at all hours of the day and night. You know, the police were stopping by the store at 2 in the morning just to come in and shoot the bull and see how I was doing, and just because they noticed the light was on. I don't have any problem, and that's something else you may want to look at. It's a burglar alarm of some sort. Yeah. I'm right across the street from the police department. So the chances of me getting broken into are there, but they're not as great as being in other places. Plus, I have a live webcam. I promote a lot online, and so I think that deters a lot of people from even worrying about it. But yeah, security and all sorts of things you have to think about when you've got your storefront. So it's one of those things.
Absolutely. So looking over all those things, there's a lot more expense than meets the eye. When you walk in there and think that, well, it's not just the rent. As you mentioned before, the rent's probably the cheapest part of this deal in most cases, unless, of course, you're renting something really huge, in which case you want to think through that carefully. But overall, what you see isn't necessarily what you get, and there's a lot more to it than really what you think, expense-wise.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if you want to go in and take the building as is, throw up your bench and throw up a cash register and whatever, and you don't care how it looks, yeah, you can do it that way. I'm just thinking that the public perception of it isn't going to be as good as if you were still at home.
Yeah.
If you're still at home, you may not have the customer base that comes to your house to see what your house looks like. You may be doing more pickups and deliveries. But, you know, seeing that store is pretty much a reflection on the owner.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a reflection so much on the employee, because the employee is also a reflection on the owner. So, yeah, if you want to... I talked to a guy who opened a store north of me in another town, and he put his stuff in there. He didn't even shampoo the carpets.
Ooh.
And it looked like it was a kennel in there before. I mean, yeah, you probably don't have to, but I'm going to come in and take one look around and probably, you know, take a sniff and think, well, do I want my computer fixed here? I mean, it looked like a dog kennel inside. I mean,
I've been in computer stores like that, actually.
Yeah, and it's just a reflection on the guy. Now, another place, a guy rents a place that used to be a bank. Well, the teller windows are still there, you know, the teller spots, and so that's a great countertop for dealing with the customers. And then the back counter, that's his area, his bench, and so really that didn't need much modification, even, you know, since it was an old bank, and it was, banks are pretty much kept up to professional standards, you know, and you had nice carpet, nice tile, and, you know, this and that, so that really didn't take much, but you just have to, again, I went on the road for months looking at other shops and talking to other people and just seeing what a vision that I had for mine, and it came out. But yeah, this whole thing is a reflection on you and your work, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, especially if you're slapping your name on the storefront. Some techs do use their own name on their store. It's just like everything else, like every part of branding. Your name is a reflection. You know, that's not just representing your business, but it's representing you personally. So you want to present, you want to make yourself as presentable as possible in every respect. Now, that brings up another topic right there in terms of the storefront signage. And that's another aspect that I had kind of a rude awakening to, because that's going to depend a lot, not just on what kind of sign you want to have. It really depends more on what kind of sign you're allowed to have, because in a lot of local jurisdictions, there are often some very strict ordinances on signage. Some places or some towns, some cities, some counties, depending on where you are, will allow you to have pretty much any kind of sign you want. And then others are very, very strict about what you can and can't put up on the storefront. And a lot of cases that involves permits and fees and things like that. Signage itself can be a very, very tricky part of setting up a storefront.
Yeah, it's kind of unique, because I was on the city council at the time I started, when I moved downtown, and so I had my sign guy come and he measured everything, and he says, and by the way, you probably know this already, you have to go into the city and get yourself a $75 sign permit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, oh, okay. And so I did that, and then informed me that this graphic or that graphic had to be just a little smaller, because the ordinance said that you couldn't have any more than 75% of the store window covered, you know, and so there's percentages of, in our town anyway, of what you put on your window. You couldn't have it all, you know, covered in signage material. Then, so anyway, I spent $900 on my signs for the store on the windows. And then every day, the secretary next door at the law office parks her Escalade in front of the building. And so people have a problem seeing that side of the store. So
we're
going to address that one of these days. But and it helped, too. After I moved in, then next thing you know, across the street, they rented that building. Now, that's a storefront for a T-shirt shop, and they do embroidery and customization and things like that. So that was a nice thing that people on the side street that I'm on, that building then got rented because there was more activity on that side of the street, you know, that side street that we had in town. So that was really nice, too. So we're back and forth a lot between the two. Usually once a month we have pizza back and forth and have some fun and games there. But that also helps, too, is if you... If your business will attract other business, or if they attract you to fill in a slot in your downtown.
Mm-hmm. Well, I ran into a problem with signage from my store. Now, my first location, I was in Winter Park, and I was actually in the county, but not in the city. And the signage wasn't as critical there, although the county did have certain rules and regulations on that. However, when I moved my store into the Altamont Springs, I was on the main drag on Highway 436, Cimarron Boulevard there, and it was right pretty much in the heart of town, and they had some very strict rules about signage. It had to be so many feet away from the street. It can only be so large. In my actual storefront window, I could only cover up about 25% of that window. And they check on you. They'll come around and they'll check, and they will slap a note on your door. They'll walk in. They'll slap a fine on you, that sort of thing, if you're in violation. You know, in Winter Park, it wasn't so bad, but Altamont Springs, well, they were right on top of you.
Yeah.
And it was a major problem.
That was a nice thing for me was my sign guy in town had done so much work in the city that he says, I'm not putting anything up until you get the permit, because he says, I'm not putting it up and taking it down and putting it back up again. Yeah. All it's going to do is cost us both money. So I was real, real tickled that he knew the regulations. Now, somebody, if I'd have hired from out of town or somewhere from, you know, wherever, he wouldn't have known the difference. He'd have just put the sign up, and then I'd have been in trouble, and there would have been a lot of problems there. So it's good to have somebody who knows the rules, too, if you don't.
That's true. It's not just the rules of the signage. It's the rules for actually setting up the store, too. At least in the county I was in, the building inspector had to come by before you could even open your door and inspect the building. And if it wasn't exactly up to code, you couldn't open. And oftentimes he would give you a list of things that you had to fix that turned out to be very expensive fixes. And you could quickly run up a bill for getting yourself in line to where you needed to be before they would let you open the doors.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
In our next episode, we'll continue our discussion with Pat and learn more about how he opened his store. We'll learn how he utilized floor space in more than one way to maximize his investment, some of the costs involved in setting up the store, and how inventory management can make or break your bottom line, as we continue with part 3 of our 6-part series on opening a computer store. Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May the force field be with you.